Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time, that's 12 to 3 Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio, coming to you from the Farmers Insurance Studios. Farmers Insurance can save you a bundle. All you have to do is call 1-888-FARMERS to get a quote today.
We are farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Okay, so the latest on Tiger Woods is he is in stable condition. That's good. And as we shared with you yesterday, they did not appear to be and are not life-threatening injuries. But as we discussed yesterday, the rest of his playing career very much hangs in the balance. And we'll discuss that. And as I read as a headline, like, look, the headline should be he survived what was a horrific crash. Very, very fortunate as the police officer who pulled him out or was going to pull him out for the jaws of life or whatever arrived. Said, like, he's lucky to be alive. But we're going to talk about Tiger upcoming. Tara Sullivan's going to join us half past the hour. She works for the Boston Globe. She's covered him for years. Daniel Jeremiah will join us next hour, and he'll get us ready for free agency for the NFL draft. And Michael Lee will join us. We'll talk some NBA hoop as we had a bunch of interesting games again last night. But let's start with the story you just heard from Dan Beyer. And you're going to hear from Dan Beyer throughout the show, half past the hour. He gives us updates. He joins us for games. He's got his own show as well. He's awesome. Here's from Art Rooney II, and they put this out on, this is the weirdest thing. It's like the Steelers so badly want to be like the rest of the world, right? And so gung-ho. Ben Roethlisberger and I met this morning. We had a productive meeting. We were able to discuss a lot of things that relate to where we are and where we want to be and where we want to go. Ben assured me that he is committed to coming back to help us win, and I told Ben we'd like to have him back to help us win a championship. We both understand the next step is to work out Ben's contract situation. I mean, now look, I think there's nuance to it. I'm sure they're like, look, are you coming back just because you want to collect every penny, or are you coming back because you want to play football? And it's like, no, I want to play football while collecting every penny. So it feels like this is a formality that Ben is a Steelers quarterback. The only question is, how much of a haircut is he going to take? Right? This reminds me of so many of us in the workforce. When everything got shut down, many of our bosses came to us and said, hey, I can't make you take a haircut, but I can talk to you about it. Right? And Ben Roethlisberger, can they cut him? Not really. No, they can't really cut him. Because if they do, there's just a massive cap hit. But they can renegotiate his contract. They can figure out a way to push that thing down the road. He'll have to take less money up front and probably see less money in the long term. But it will help the franchise long term to do so. And in the short term as well. But Big Ben running it back is interesting. The question isn't, do you want to play? It's how little will you play for? Everybody always says, you know, I did it for free, but they wouldn't actually do it for free. People often say, yeah, I'd take less to stay here. Hometown discount, how much less? And in this case for Ben Roethlisberger, he does have leverage. He can say like, nah, not feeling it. And they can say, all right, well, we're going to cut you. And take a massive cap hit. So his leverage is, I don't want to retire. And right now you can't really cut me and I can't live with this contract. Their leverage is, ultimately, they decide who plays. Ben's agent, Ryan Tolner, who's a friend of mine, and we've texted a little bit, but not on Big Ben. They want Ben back and will contact me soon to address the cap situation. As we've shared since the season ended, We're happy to creatively adjust his contract to help the team as best possible. A year ago, Ben wasn't sure if he could throw again, but he battled back to get 12 wins with the eighth division title of his career. That's Ryan Tolner. Tolner brothers are good dudes, good agents. They've been with Ben forever. And my guess is, like, look, they're going to be creative. They're going to do what the Buccaneers are talking about doing with Tom Brady. It's an extension, but not really an extension. For Brady, it might be an extension. It might be an opening for him to play more. But for Big Ben, this is about it, right? This is the encore performance. The lights are going to go on afterwards. Everybody's like, you don't got to go home, but you got to get up out of here. And I would guess that Ben Roethlisberger kind of hat in hand said, hey, I got to be better. I got to be in better shape. I got to learn this new offense. And they probably told him, you're going to have to take less money, and we're probably going to draft a quarterback or groom somebody to ultimately take. And right now he's like, whatever it takes, we'll do it. I'm in. That's the likely conversation that they had. And we can criticize Ben for his flaws. They are prominent. Most people know them. But, you know, there were times late last season when he stepped up and threw the ball well. And if he takes substantially less, he can't open up a bunch of money for substantially more. They got to figure out the running back position. They got to figure out the defense. They got to figure out the cap hill and how to get out of it. But to me, this is the Steelers trying to be, hey, we can do all this stuff in public. You know, last week you had their general manager saying, yeah, he wants to come back, but basically he's going to have to take a pay cut. Now the owner is saying the exact same thing. And Ben is saying, well, I'm willing to take a pay cut. I just want to play football. Everyone will say, I want to. It's just like everyone says, I want to win. All right, are you willing to do the little things it takes to win? Well, what little things? I'm willing to take less money in order to make it work. How much less money? How much less money? Coming up next, we'll get the latest on the Tiger Woods condition. Plus, I want to give you my thoughts on Tiger's golf future. All right, so Big Ben coming back. We don't know what the rate is. It's going to be substantially less, somewhere in between the 19 he's making and the two they want to pay him, right? Somewhere in between the two, that's the sweet spot. And, you know, the Steelers are like, look, the closer you get to two, the more things that we can put around you. And Ben's agent, the Tolner brothers, are saying, Ryan Tolner is saying, yeah, but you owe him 19. And if you cut him, you still owe him 19. And it hurts you, not us.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio, live from the Farmers Insurance, Fox Sports Radio studios. Call 888-FARMERS to switch and you can save a bundle on your auto insurance. L.A. County Sheriff Alex Villanueva spoke to the media yesterday in regards to Tiger Woods. Here's what he had to say.
100 feet from the center divider at the intersection and rested on the west side of the road in the brush, sustained major damage to the vehicle. You've seen all the images of that. With that, our Lomita Sheriff Station will be conducting the traffic investigation, and it'll take from days to several weeks to get the whole thing together. Once the investigation is completed, we will provide a detailed report. It'll be available, you know, based on Public Record Act request, and we will not discuss it any further after that point. The front end was totally destroyed. The bumpers, everything was destroyed. Airbags deployed, all of that. And however, thankfully, the interior was more or less intact, which kind of gave him the cushion to survive what's otherwise would have been a fatal crash.
You know, it's amazing. This is a quick side note. Is, you know, there's far fewer fatalities in auto accidents than there ever used to be. I mean, like, crazy number lower, right? Like, if you look, if you just kind of Google, you know, motor vehicle fatalities by year, right? By year. Like, it's really, really interesting. If, you know, if you go back, like, per million people, it's like 2011 was the lowest up until 2019. This year, it's going to be exceptional, though, because so many fewer people have been traveling because of quarantine. But I mean, if you go back to 1990, it was two people per 1 million are killed in an auto accident. 1980, 3.35. 1970, 4.74. And if you go back to 1960, it's in the five. It's always been the fives and even sixes and sevens in the 50s. The point is that that cars, and that was, it's a tough one for the Hyundai Genesis people, right? Like, that's their brand new, super big Luxo SUV, complimentary car. And you look at it, and you're like, man, that is it's a bit of a mangled mess. But the truth is, it did its job. But it can't protect every part of your, like, it's as much as it's a pillow for the rest of your body, and that was fine. His legs were kind of a mangled mess. All right, here's Tom Rinaldi from Fox Sports on The Herd earlier today talking about Tiger's importance to golf.
Jordan and Tiger meant more to their respective sports than anyone else. And I would even say that perhaps Tiger, because of how he changed his sport in terms of its inclusive category, that maybe he even outpaces Jordan in that regard. 8 and 9 and 10 deep, the children that wanted to see him, touch him, be a part of him, the older generations that wanted to see him, the people of color, the black and brown faces that came out. And I said this, Colin, I really believe it. Right now, he is among the five most compelling figures in our country across any venue, any societal institution, for many of the reasons you eloquently laid out at the top of this hour. For what he achieved, but also what unfolded in the wake of that achievement. I'm compelled, as you are, Colin, by greatness. But what he embodies is greatness at its highest note and also at its greatest cost. That's what, in so many ways, Tiger embodies. And to me, that's the best I can do to put my finger on why he is so compelling.
Okay, so... Here's the thing about Tiger Woods. If you look at pre-car accident for him, right? First car accident, which we'll call it a car accident, right? Pre-issues with Elon and issues with infidelity. Like, you go back to the first half of his career. That was a generation where we didn't care about somebody's personal life. And if we did, it was more... boys will be boys, right? That's how we covered Jordan. That's how we covered Tiger. That's how we covered most of the stars from that era, right? And then it changed, and he was, the things he had done, part of it was he obviously got outed by his wife, but before he got outed by his wife, it was a National Enquirer story, but we didn't used to care. And then all of a sudden we did care, and he kind of got caught in between a generational shift in how we viewed our star athletes and, frankly, our politicians. Right? Really, the coverage of and the treatment of Bill Clinton and Bill Clinton's actions and being caught with his actions, like, that changed how everything looked and everything felt. And so Tiger Part 2 was, you know... There were all of these negatives. And then the recent Tiger, there was a little bit of the late Kobe to him, right? Where he had the golf tournament with his son, where everybody loved Charlie. He had the win at the Masters, where he was incredibly gracious. And of course, he held his child at, you know, when he walked off and he won the Masters. And like, all of these things he became a human being. He went from a superhero to a troubled star to a human being, all in the last 45 years and all in the public eye. And I think now it becomes a tragic ending to an incredible career. That's how I would deem it. I don't think there's a way... People say, well, like, it's golf. You can come back from anything. Like, your body can only take so much. He was already teetering on possibly shutting it down at some point in the year. Another back surgery and now this. And by the way, this couldn't have been good for his back.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Tara Sullivan's a sports columnist for the Boston Globe. You can follow her on Twitter at @Globe_Tara. She joins us in the Doug Gottlieb Show. We're live in the Farmers Insurance Fox Sports Radio studios. Call 888-FARMERS, and you could save a whole lot of something on auto insurance. Tara, where were you when you heard about Tiger's accident?
Oh, I actually was in the car taking my daughter somewhere, and as I'm wont to do when you pull into a red light, you know, just check the emails and Twitters and direct messages right away, and a former editor that I used to work with had already emailed me a link. He lives in California, and it must have come through right away, and it just kind of took my breath away.
We're all human beings. We know Tiger's background. It appears there's no drugs or alcohol involved, but that for us, I think that was my first fear. It's like, oh man, what happened? Was that yours?
Well, no. I mean, I will say my first fear was just that he was going to survive. You know, yeah. I think just in so many traumas and the sports world and beyond, I think that was the first thing I thought was, oh my God, just let him live, you know, and not have this kind of tragedy. And my second thought was probably, don't let him be paralyzed either, you know, because we're talking about such an elite athlete. But then, of course, you do just wonder about, yeah, the circumstances. And I just think it's all of our normal curiosity combined with, you know, the histories that we do know about people in the public eye. So certainly you do wonder just about the circumstances. You can't help it. But, you know, right away with the 7 early morning, you know, I thought, oh, please, God, don't let him sit out all night, you know, something like that. But it did seem more like it was an early morning thing. And I was hopeful that nothing, you know, nothing bad like that would have been involved.
Okay, now we know there's some severe leg injuries, and this guy's come back from a lot, right?
Yeah.
Not just in his personal life, but physically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he was currently on the mend from another back surgery. I'm not trying to speculate, but it feels like we may have seen the last of him in a professional golf tournament setting. Is it too much to allow those thoughts to creep into our mind?
Well, it feels early, right? On a human perspective, you're kind of like, oh God, like I even put this in my column today. Like, it doesn't matter yet. You know, you kind of just want to remind yourself he's a human being. He's a father first. You know, you want to root for recovery. And I even read comments from Rory McIlroy to that effect today. You know, like golf is so far away from the point it's not even on the map yet. But Tiger is the transcendent golfer of not only the generation that I'm in, but the one just before me, the one, you know, even the one that's even a bit younger than me. Like, he's just been that good for that long and has such a long and deep impact on the sport that we can't help but wonder, is he going to be at that level again? Listen, we were wrestling with those questions anyway, as you just pointed out, all the injuries, the back problems, you know, his age at 43 and how much golf he's put in over the years. You know, was that Masters win in 2019 like that shooting star, you know, of his professional career, PGA career? Was that going to be the, you know, the crowning, the final moment in that kind of spotlight? But it's hard not to wonder, you know, if he's going to be at that competitive level again, because it's hard to come back from anything. It's harder when you've had to do it many, many times over, and it's harder when you're not 23, but you're 43. So there's a lot of things he's going to have to overcome.
How is he viewed in the, you know, the professional golfers I know, a lot of the young ones are like, look, he made it cool. Like, I mean, he's kind of created this young generation that are so hard to beat because there's such a depth of incredible talent. And I always thought it was funny, like, I'm not scared of Tiger. And then, of course, you go back a year, almost 2 years ago at Augusta, and guys didn't have the same reaction when they heard those Tiger roars that they thought they were going to have. But with the recent injuries and the recent struggles, has he been viewed on the tour recently?
Oh, it's been a fascinating story arc from my perspective. Now, I came into covering Tiger maybe midway through his tremendous career. I've covered 12 Masters, and I've covered ones where he was booed, you know, in the years right after some of the personal troubles. And I've been lucky enough to cover 2019 and the one surrounding that year. And the transformation of the way Tiger is not only viewed on tour, but also the way he acts on tour, the interaction with fellow golfers, you know, the friendship with Phil Mickelson doing being practice partners at Augusta. These things in recent years, to me, just indicate a man who has sort of evolved and morphed into somebody much more comfortable in his role as an elder statesman in the game. Early on, he couldn't have cared less, right? What he wanted to do was intimidate you. He didn't want to let you in on the inside. Now you have, you know, this young Justin Thomas, who is not only a playing partner, but one of his closest friends in life away from the course. So I think Tiger is viewed much more on a one-to-one basis by other guys on the tour, and occasionally somebody who has to be feared as a golfer. And then respect-wise for what he has done, you know, is up there with anybody they've ever been on the course with.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. That's the voice of Tara Sullivan. She's a sports columnist and a good one for the Boston Globe. She's covered Tiger Woods for years. Of course, we're all reacting to the news. Tiger in a horrific car accident yesterday. Obviously not life-threatening injuries, but career-threatening, no doubt, with a shattered ankle, with a compound fracture of the leg, a rod put in, got problems in his toes. Like, it is going to be a long, lengthy, and painful recovery. How did the documentary that come out? How do you think people viewed Tiger after watching the doc about his life?
Well, do I have to admit that it's still in my DVR queue and I haven't watched it yet? So I will defer to you to answer that question, other than to fall back on, like, I just think the evolving view of Tiger from that sort of intimidating, aloof presence early on to the one, you know, who fell into his kid's arms after winning in 2019. Like, I just think we see a softer guy with just a lot more perspective on life now, you know, where he talked about, listen, I didn't just worry about whether I'd win a tournament again. I worried if I'd be able to pick up my kids again, you know, with all the back injuries. So I just think that we've come to appreciate a guy who has a lot more perspective now than when he was first on the tour.
If he never plays again, will
he doesn't have to do another thing.
Will Jack still be considered the greatest of all time?
Oh, it's such a hard question, isn't it? I mean, I don't. This is, you know, we're in the Jordan LeBron and Tom Brady versus the field. And, you know, it all depends on what your rubric is and what you value. You know, for Tiger, I think the impact and the way he changed the game, you mentioned, you know, an entire generation of golfers in his wake who not only were inspired to pick up the clubs because he did and made it cool, but also are these superior athletes in ways that golfers weren't before. The training and the power and the things that Tiger brought to the game. So I think in terms of impact, it's difficult for me to imagine anybody being bigger. I did not cover Jack Nicklaus. I've been lucky enough, you know, to be at his interview sessions at the Masters and things like that. But, you know, I just, for me, Tiger is just so singular on so many levels in the sport. And then when you combine that with, you know, golf being kind of this elitist sport and Tiger and his ethnicity and the combination and the racial background, it's just hard for me to imagine somebody in my lifetime being better or bigger to the game of golf.
What does golf do? I mean, the ratings are just not the same when he's not involved. What do they do?
Yeah. It's the question they're trying to answer all the time. I mean, you just don't seem to find that singular person who stays atop the game anymore the way that Tiger did, and they don't draw the ratings. I mean, he's a unicorn. I mean, I don't know that you can say to yourself, we must find another Tiger. I mean, that just doesn't happen. So I don't have the answer for you other than to say that it's the one they're wrestling with, and quite honestly, one that all of, I think, televised sports are wrestling with anyway, right? Like, how much are people watching? How much is the audience divided? How much has television changed? But yes, finding stars and hanging on those stars and getting ratings, you know, are people going to tune in to watch Brooks Koepka on a Sunday the way they did Tiger? I don't think so.
No, the answer is no. I mean, there's no metric that tells us that forget about one golfer, that there's any group of golfers that'll make us watch if he's not involved. He's really, it was a happening. It was a thing. I mean, he and I are the same age. We grew up in Orange County. I've been doing this for almost 20 years. I never thought to watch golf before Tiger Woods started playing golf, right? I just didn't. And But
he made it must-watch TV. Yeah, the Sundays of a major with Tiger in contention. I mean, yeah, it was the talk. It was the first thing on talk radio. It was the first headline in the paper. I mean, that golf just had such an incredible find in him. And, you know, every golfer out there, I think often of the ones who haven't really won a lot of tournaments, but are multi-millionaires, you know, many times over, have endorsements. I mean, they all owe Tiger a debt. And Phil Mickelson has somebody who, you know, as we said, maybe the closest thing to a rival that Tiger had, you know, has often said that, and many, many times, I owe him so much. I thank him so much. The ratings tripled, the money tripled, you know, all of the impact that he had. You just don't replace that with one person, that's for sure.
Awesome stuff. Really appreciate your perspective, Tara. Here's how I know you're an honest person. You admitted to looking at the Twitter during a stoplight. Like, I don't think that's the end of the earth. My kid's like, don't text and drive. I'm not texting and driving. I'm just checking out what's going on. I'm not going to.
Yeah, I was in the car for a long time, and then you get that jittery, like, let me check in with the office kind of thing. And, yeah, I promise I only do it at a red light, and I was stopped, and I put the car in park. I check, and then I move again.
You put it in park. Yes, come on. You don't put it in park at the red light, do you?
I do if I'm in a line of cars. I will.
Okay. You're a better person than me. Is there a way in which we can get that thing to pop up on our screen or like right there on our windshield? That's the next step, Twitter. Twitterverse.
Oh, Lord. We don't need more distractions. But
no, not distractions. But you know how some cars have that where they can, you're looking straight ahead and it gives you the speed. They can like superimposes it on your windshield.
Oh, the new ones, they do that, don't they?
Right.
Well,
right.
The Apple CarPlay.
So I'm thinking, here's what I'm here, just roll with me on this. So I'm thinking, what if they had tweets, headlines that pop up on your screen? What if?
I don't know. I don't know. I know that I struggle enough to not be thinking of other things when I'm driving, to be perfectly honest. So I probably shouldn't invite any more into my life. But you might have something there. Maybe you need to go and get in touch with Mark Cuban and get on the what's the show, you know, where you're selling
Shark
a
Tank.
New idea.
Shark Tank.
There you go. Yeah. Shark yeah.
Tara, thanks so much. Something. Really appreciate you.
All right. Thank you. Take care.
All right. Tara Sullivan, super talented columnist, Boston Globe, @Globe_Tara. @Globe_Tara. Byer, do you look at your phone when you're driving?
I really try not to. I don't check Twitter when I'm driving.
I try not to. I try not to. There's a difference in doing and trying. I do try not to. My kids are in the car. I have them play music and pick it out of my phone. Right? Then they can just do that. You guys, that way the phone is out of my hands.
Yeah, that's smart. I can't check Twitter at all. Like, I can't read. I wouldn't be able to do that. I try to, you know, place
can't
calls.
Read?
Read while
Guys,
I'm driving.
Buyer can't read?
It's only my
buyer.
Some actually have questioned that after maybe a mistake in an update here or there. But the the placing of a call, you know, that would be what I'm doing when I'm driving. I wouldn't be reading a tweet.
I've gotten pulled over for having the cell phone in my hands. Like, look, dude, hold on, take a breath. I was just trying to call somebody, but my hands free thing wasn't working correctly. Right, that's when I've gotten pulled over.
How'd
never
that
have
work?
The
Did it work?
Huh?
Did he let you go or not?
No.
Okay. All right.
No, they need the dues, man.
Yeah.
Like, sorry, bud, we need the funds. You had it in your hands, sir. You had it in your hands. That is illegal. All right, man. I don't know what to tell you. Like, you've never had your cell phone in your hand? Well, that's not the point. The point is you had it, so it's legal. Like, all right, but I wasn't holding it up to my ear. Doesn't matter.
I hate to say it, but I do think that there is a difference with the traffic that we get in Los Angeles, especially right where our studios are, where it's bumper to bumper, you know, at 4:30, 5 o'clock,
yeah,
and you're going along at 10 miles per hour as opposed to, you know, whipping down the road at 60, 70 miles an hour trying to do that stuff.
Good point. It's a good point. There are some autopilot features that some cars have. I'm not saying that mine has one or that I would use one and be on the phone. I'm just pointing out that some cars do have that.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
There are people in the media and people in our world that like to make fun of the Patriots, to act like their way of doing things is so arcane. You can't do it the way the Patriots do it. Who would do that? The Buccaneers. Well, no. The Buccaneers are a completely different organization. They do operate a completely different way. That's why Tom Brady went there. This was Tampa Bay Buccaneers general manager Jason Light on with Rich Eisen talking about the possibility of an extension for Tom Brady.
Are you going to talk extension with Brady, Jason?
That's a possibility. He's certainly didn't look like he slowed down. That's a possibility, and we'll have to see how that goes.
So has there been a phone call placed to TB12 already? When was the last time you talked to Tom?
Well, I talk to Tom often. Okay. So, but probably keep that under wraps
okay.
right now.
Okay.
But it's like I said, I know it appears that he really had a good time this year, winning the Super Bowl, and likes our organization, likes our coaches, likes our head coach and ownership. So, and we certainly love him. So usually when you have those two things going for each other, it's a match made in heaven. So we'd like to keep this going.
We'd like to keep this going. One of two things happen. One would be you extend him, you lower the cap threshold, you pay him out over more time. That's exactly what the New England Patriots did for years. Like the story is mistold about Tom Brady. In the peak of his career, he was the top five paid player in the league. And then they would go back every year and go like, hey, we'll give you a little cash. We'll incentivize stuff. We'll move some money around for the cap. Fine, whatever. I'm still getting my money? Sure. He made over $250 million from the Patriots. He was well compensated. And he'll be plenty compensated for the Buccaneers. The other possibility is they give him a raise and extension. Yeah, that's not going to end well. That's not going to end well. But I do think there is the possibility. I do think there's the possibility that they do something stupid like, hey, this was awesome. We love it. Let's give a bunch more money for a bunch more years. Like, yeah, he's 43. He played well at times. He didn't at times. And he's not going to play better. He may keep looking better, but that's whatever eye cream that Giselle gives him, right? Whatever he's putting in his hair is incredible. They don't have that for shoulders and for elbows that are legal. They just don't. But I kind of think the Buccaneers are going to do exactly what the Patriots did. Like, hey, listen, we love you. We're going to give you some more money and more years. We're just going to take some back from this year. And be like, whatever. Okay. Figure it out. I'm probably not going to play more than one more year anyway. You're going to still owe me some money? Sure. If I retire, do I get that money? Yes. Okay, fine. Do whatever you want. That, by the way, is the exact same game plan as the Patriots. And what is it? Imitation is the most sincere form of flattery? You're damn right it is. You're damn right it is. And they are imitating the Patriots in that style. And, you know, like, look, there's always going to be people like, well, look at the weaponry he had. Well, yeah. The Buccaneers were bad for 10 years. They drafted at the top of every round for the past couple of years. And and as good as that defense was, and that defense was outstanding, the Patriots defense was excellent the past couple of years. They had 8 guys opt out this year. The only thing Jason Light did a better job of is acquiring wide receivers. And those wide receivers were so good, Tom Brady brought in a wide receiver of his own in Antonio Brown and a tight end of his own in Rob Gronkowski. So we're all sitting here going like, oh, Jason Light's a genius. He did a good job. Built a nice team. Nice team. But all of these things work because Gronk had retired and he wanted to go with Tom. Because Antonio Brown couldn't really get a job most places in the league. And Tom's, Tom swore by him. You know, Tom was his co-signer, if you will. But it's always funny to me, like, oh, they look at the weapons that they have. Yeah, okay, who did he throw to in the playoffs? Who did he use to win the World Series? Those were his guys. He brought in a formerly retired tight end who didn't do a ton until he caught 2 tutties, if you will, in the Super Bowl, and Antonio Brown, who was out of work and nobody really wanted to put up with in the regular season anyway, and he found the perfect role for him. But we act like, oh, Tampa, they did so. All Tampa's going to try and do now is hold on to Tom Brady the same way the Patriots held on to Tom Brady. hey, man, we know you want more money. We'll give you some more, but long-term deal, will you sign this? You'll make less upfront. Okay. I have plenty of money anyway, as long as I'm getting the respect I deserve. Buyer, you don't think they would give him a raise and overcompensate him, do you? All right, working on buyer. Bruce Arians on outside free agents possibly giving Super Bowl discounts to play with Tom Brady. I don't know how many outsiders we're going to look at. If we keep our guys and then hit the draft again, like we've hit it the last few years, we're going to be in great shape. Right. Look, the hit rate on free agents is 33% anyway. That's a really smart way of looking at it. So I think when you look at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, whatever they do with Chris Godwin, it's probably saving some money on Tom Brady, saving some money elsewhere, and guys giving back some money and changing their salaries and getting money on the back end in the long run so they can keep this offense together. That sounds much more reasonable. And that's where Bruce Arians says they are. So my big takeaway is the trying to get him to take less money and make it advantageous for him to stay long term. He likes it here, we like him. Everything smiley and good. That is absolutely brilliant. And how do I know it's brilliant and that it works? I give you the New England Patriots, who did the exact same strategy with Tom Brady, and they spread that money around and they built a juggernaut of a defense.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Daniel Jeremiah joins us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. DJ, who, of course, download Move the Sticks. It's a great podcast. Check them out on the NFL Network. And if you're like us, you're lucky enough to hear him broadcast the, not the Padres games that he wants to broadcast, the Chargers games that he makes money to broadcast. Let's start with the Patriots. What do you think their thought process is?
First of all, if you could get money to join me in calling Padre games, then, I mean, that would be the perfect storm there, too, because he's a Dodger homer now, and so getting a chance to have him watch the Padres march towards a World Series would bring me a lot of joy. But onto the Patriots, Doug, I look where they're situated in the draft, and they're not in no man's land. I think they actually have the ability, if they wanted to do something, to try and move up a little bit to get one of these guys, they could. I keep an eye on what happens with Cam. I know there's some talk today that they could run it back with Cam. That would be surprising to me. I would think that they're, maybe try and look at a different option. I think they've seen what it can look like with Cam, and I would think that they feel like they're going to need a little bit better than that to go chase a trophy.
He can't throw a football.
Yeah, and there was definitely issues with that. I mean, I did the Charger game last year where they beat the crud out of the Chargers and they just ran it down their throat. So, you know, they have a formula, but man, everything else has to be perfect. You've got to be a part of the run game. You've got to play great defense and great special teams, which they did on that day.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. That's the voice of Daniel Jeremiah. Okay, let's get to some of the other things kind of going on. So Big Ben apparently is going to come back at some discounted rate. I don't know what the Steelers can't force him to retire, right? So he's going to come back. Can they win with Big Ben?
They can win. I don't think they can win a championship right now with their roster the way it is. And so my discussion on that has been, look, I think Ben is probably their best option for next year in terms of trying to win as many games as they possibly can. But I don't think they're equipped to win a championship. So for me, and you look at an organization like that, that basically that's all that they care about, I would be trying to, audition the next guy to see if we can get that process started a little bit earlier. But I can't argue with the fact that Ben, will give them the chance to win as many games as possible over what the alternatives might be. But I don't think that this roster is going to be a championship level with the rest of Ben's career. I don't see that happening.
So let's say they get a bunch of money back. What can they do with the roster? What's reasonable?
Offensive line. I mean, that's the best thing they can do is they've got to get a run game. They've got to get some physicality back into their offense, and that will take some of that pressure off with Ben. So to me, When you look at the way he's, you know, where he is right now physically, I think he'll be a little bit stronger next year, a year removed from that arm surgery. But he's still going to be best, to me, being able to throw over the top, which is just, you know, layup throws over the top where you're not really having to drive the football, and then being able to spread people out and pick them apart underneath. The drive throws, that to me is a little bit of a concern. And you're not going to get those layup throws over the top if you can't run the football.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Daniel Jeremiah is our guest. Okay, DJ, let's get into the quarterbacks in the upcoming NFL draft. Trevor Lawrence, take him off the board, right? We know where he's going.
Yeah.
Who's the first quarterback after Trevor Lawrence you would take?
I would go with Zach Wilson. Based off of what I saw from last year, I thought he was pretty special, Doug. I was talking to Cutcliffe the other day, David Cutcliffe at Duke, mm-hmm. who's as good with quarterbacks as anybody. And he was talking about the importance of having, you know, quick, explosive hands. You know, we think about arm strength, you think about their feet, but he, you know, there's also with all the RPOs and all the ball handling and just being able to get the ball out quick, those, like, think of a shortstop, just how quick that transfer is. Like, this dude's got crazy explosive hands, and his skill set, you know, being able to throw off platform, different arm angles, all that stuff is kind of where we are in the game right now, where it's going. I think he's a really intriguing player.
Okay. After him, who's next?
Yeah, this is where I think it's kind of a toss up. It's kind of what your flavor is, but I actually have Trey Lance and then Justin Fields, but I can hear the argument the other way. I went with Lance because I thought he was a better decision maker. I thought he was more decisive. You know, he trusts what he sees and just lets it rip. Whereas with Fields, he can make every throw. He's a phenomenal athlete. And I see him work through his progressions, Doug, but there's times where I think he's waiting for a guy to be a little more open than he needs to be, and he's just holding the ball. I just want to see him rip it and cut it loose. So that, to me, just being a little more decisive, and that's something he can improve. But that was the deciding factor on a very close evaluation for me.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. It's interesting. Okay, so whose system does Lance fit with?
Lance, I think, can fit with Carolina. I think he could fit in there. He's done everything at North Dakota State. They're under center. He's calling protections. He had a lot more on his plate there. I could make a case Trey Lance would be a really good fit with New England, provided he had some time to sit and learn. I think that would be a great fit for him. So he fits a lot of people, Doug, because, you know, he had more on him at that system at North Dakota State. The same things we said about Wentz when he was coming out of there, same thing. Now his name's going to escape me, and then he's with the Chargers, so that's terrible.
Shoot. Easton Stick.
Easton Stick. Yeah, I apologize. Easton's a good dude, too.
He doesn't have anything nice to say about you, by the way.
Yeah, he rightfully so.
Hey, the Tom Brady thing, let me play for you. This is Jason Light earlier today on, I think, with Rich Eisen. Yeah, with Rich Eisen. This is Jason Light talking about Tom Brady.
Are you going to talk extension with Brady, Jason?
That's a possibility. He's certainly didn't look like he slowed down any this year. So that's a possibility, and we'll have to see how that goes.
So has there been a phone call placed to TB12 already? When was the last time you talked to Tom?
Well, I talk to Tom often. Okay. So, but probably keep that under wraps right now.
Okay.
But it's like I said, it's, I know it appears that he really had a good time this year, went in the Super Bowl, yep. And likes our organization, likes our coaches, likes our head coach and ownership. So, and we certainly love him. So usually when you have those two things going for each other, it's a match made in heaven. So we'd like to keep this going.
It feels to me like they're going to ask Tom to do exactly what New England wanted Tom to do. Hey, we love you. You love it here. How about if we give you a couple more years and we kind of lower your salary, right? Isn't that the New England way? Isn't that what everybody kind of wants to do? And if Jason Light, he'd be smart to do it?
Yeah, I don't think that they'll do that, though. I don't. I think it's a more player-friendly operation down there. I know Jason had spent time in New England, but I think what they'll do is they'll spend him out. I think they'll probably give him a nice chunk up front and just try and maybe lower the number But I would guess he's going to, with this extension, I would guess he's going to end up getting more money than he was scheduled to get. I think he was supposed to get $25 million, right? Isn't that what the what the number was going to be? I bet you he ends up north of that. I do. I just think that they have it's just a different ethos, I guess, down there. So we'll see how it all comes out. I've known Jason forever, and just kind of listening to that clip, I hadn't heard it. I'd be shocked if they aren't pretty well into that process. Listen to that clip.
Who's the quarterback in Philadelphia next year?
I think Jalen Hurts with a veteran coming in, and you know, I don't know who that would be. And I was at, is that somebody like a Teddy Bridgewater that they trade for? Is it a Marcus Mariota? I think they bring in some type of competition. They're in a position where they're picking at six. If they were to fall in love with one of those guys, they could take them. But I wouldn't be surprised if they just brought in, you know, some competition and try and fix some other holes on this roster, which there are a few.
Do you like that? Is that something that, I mean,
well,
Hurts really struggled after his second start. He was good. First start, he was okay. Second start, he was good. And then it kind of went downhill from there.
No, I don't have confidence, you know, to say that Jalen Hurts is going to be that guy, the long-term starter. But if you're asking me kind of if I was in that position, what I would do, I would probably sit there and look at every asset that I have that's not going to be a part of a championship team when we're ready to win a championship, which is a couple years away, even if everything goes perfect. And so I would be trying to, you know, trade some of my veterans that still have some value, particularly along that defensive line. I'd be collecting picks, as many as I can collect for next year. I'd be playing all my young guys, and I would give Jalen Hurts a crack at it. If he can't do it halfway through the year, then I would turn to the veteran you bring in. But this is a start over moment for me if I'm the Philadelphia Eagles. Take all the cap hits you're going to take, including the huge one with Carson Wentz, and just let the young guys play.
Daniel Jeremiah, our guest. Okay, what about the Jets? They sit there. They control kind of the rest of the draft, right?
Yeah.
They have Darnold. They have other first-round picks. As you said before, like, no reason to think they can't, you know, move those other first-round picks. You know, you don't want three first-round picks necessarily, but you thought they would take a quarterback. This is going back a couple months ago. You know Joe Douglas well. What do you think he's thinking?
Well, I think you got to kind of, and I'm scribbling this down as we're talking because I want to make sure that we get it right here. So, to me, it's not just, I think it comes down to, in my opinion, Sam Darnold versus Wilson, and it's the Sam Darnold package versus the Wilson package. So when you start with the Sam package, that comes with Sam, staying with Sam. It comes with now the number two pick, which you could trade down if you wanted to, collect a bunch of picks and add players from that collection. So it's really Sam plus number two. When you get Zach Wilson, you get Zach Wilson plus what you would be able to get in return for Sam, right? Let's say that's a second-round pick, Doug. So a second-round pick, maybe that's a second-round pick in 22 instead of this year, who knows, but let's just say that. So you get Zach Wilson, you get the second-round pick instead of the number two pick, but then you also get what you can do with the extra financial resources over the next 5 years when you look at the difference of cost between Wilson and Sam. So when I look at those two things is – as much as I like Sam and I would love to have that number two pick, which you can do a lot with, I think the package of having Zach Wilson plus a second round pick plus all that financial room to be able to bring in other players, to me, that would be the way I would go.
Okay, so where does Sam Darnold go then?
Well, you guys, looks like you can potentially scratch Pittsburgh off the list based off what we've been hearing there. San Francisco to me would be an option, would make some sense. But if I was going to say the favorite in the clubhouse, I would say, you know, between Chicago and Washington, I would probably say Washington.
And then what happens to Garoppolo?
Well, if Garoppolo, in that case, if Sam doesn't go to San Francisco, then Garoppolo is not going anywhere. But if Sam were to go to San Francisco, I would be curious to see, would they immediately turn around and trade Garoppolo, or would they feel like from an optic standpoint, you know, having Garoppolo, who's a popular player in that locker room, you'd really need to force Sam to come in there and beat him out, you know, and at that point in time, then you would trade Garoppolo. That would be fascinating to see how they would handle something like that. But, you know, New England is the name that's always going to come up anytime Garoppolo's name is mentioned.
End of the day, does Houston hold on to Deshaun Watson?
I'm going to say no, and I know they're adamant about the fact they're not they're not going to trade him. But I just, we've talked about this previously, Doug. I get the sense that Deshaun's pretty dug in on this. And eventually, you know, I think you get to the point when you look at the teams that have all this extra draft capital in this draft, if you're going to be forced to move him, you better do it before this draft, because that's going to give you the biggest return.
Carolina or Miami?
I would say Miami.
But why would they hire Charlie Fry to be Tua's personal coach because of their relationship, and then bail on Tua? I mean, I guess they see what I saw, which is there's just no wow with Tua. But that would strike me as a kind of a heel turn a little bit.
Well, you always have a plan on one path, Doug, until something else pops up. I mean, remember that back in the day, we used to, when you used to drive cross country, you kind of knew where some of the restaurants were. And so you'd be like, okay, we're going to stop in this town because that's where I know we can get this restaurant. And all of a sudden, boom, you see a Chick-fil-A sign pop up. And you're like, well, I didn't know that was there. I guess I'm going to go that way. That's kind of like the Deshaun Watson thing. I mean, you weren't planning on him being available when you made those moves. But, man, if you got a chance to get him, you take it.
Okay, so what's the value? Do you trade back Tua, and what else in return? The fourth pick?
They have the third pick. It would be Tua. I mean, gosh, you're talking about Tua, the third pick, and I would think if you're the Dolphins, you try and hold on to your second first round pick this year, and maybe part with one next year, and maybe an additional pick or player would be my guess. It's weird when you're trying to say how. People always ask the question, right? How many first-round picks do you give up? And I'm like, well, that depends on where you're picking. I mean, you can say if you're where Carolina is, maybe it's the value of four first-round picks. But when you're picking with the third pick, that pick's worth a heck of a lot more. So that, to me, I think you'd be talking about Tua, the one there at number three, maybe next year's one, and then something else. But I would think that would be pretty fair.
Great stuff, dude. Great stuff as always. I really, really appreciate you joining us. Thank you so much.
I appreciate it, bud.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.